You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahia he marie, tēnā koutou katoa, ko Beth toku ingoa.
Ko Sophia toku ingoa, nau mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki.
E whai ake nei, coming up on the show today.
I had a kōrero with Curator of Historical New Zealand Art at Auckland Art Gallery, Toi Otamaki, Dr. Jane Davidson-Ladd, about a new exhibition of treasured Māori portraits, Ngā Taonga Tūturu.
I had a kōrero with Ross Steens, Jodie Yawa McMillan and Maddie McDonald about Through the Lens, Gendered Reflections, an exhibition of the University of Auckland's art collection comprising works by female photographers and visual artists.
I had a kōrero with artist Matt Joyles about his exhibition currently on at Window Gallery, Chaos Magic. And for stage direction this week, Alice Canton is in to chat with Rutene Spooner about Be Like Billy on at Te Pou Theatre next week as part of Koanga Festival.
He aha o whakaro. We would love to hear your thoughts on these pieces, so tuku pātui mai. You can text us on 5395 rima turu iwa rima waiamairane or give us a call in the studio on 309 3879.
Also, after the show, koa e wareware e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ēnei kōrero anō hei pakihiri rokiroki mārunga i te pai tukutuku o Irirangi Poho me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
95BFM!
Ngā Taonga Tūturu, Treasured Māori Portraits is a new exhibition showing at Auckland Art Gallery, Toi Otamaki. Co-curated by Senior Curator of Māori Art, Nathan Pōhio, and Curator of Historical New Zealand Art, Dr. Jane Davidson-Ladd, the exhibition brings together whakaero and oil paintings from the gallery's collection, offering insights into the significance of tūpuna representations within te ao Māori. The exhibition displays a selection of 9 whakaero for the first time since 1915 after being on long-term loan to Tāmaki Painga Hera, Auckland War Memorial Museum, as well as 18 Gottfried Lindauer portraits featuring tūpuna from across the motu, and the first public display of Lindauer's painting of Karaitiana Te Rango, Ngāti Tamakōpiri, Ngāti Whiti Kaupeka and Ngāti Tamawhiti in 1885, as gifted to the gallery earlier this year in memory of Rangi Katukua Utiku and Riria Lydia Utiku. I had a kōrero with co-curator Dr. Jane Davidson-Ladd about the exhibition and the curation process with Nathan. I wanted to start with portraiture in general. What is the significance of representations of tūpuna in te ao Māori?
So working with my colleague Nathan Pōhio, who unfortunately couldn't be here today, who's senior curator Māori at the gallery and co-curator of the exhibition, I've developed quite significant insights into what tūpuna representations mean within te ao Māori. And it's really about a connection to whakapapa and to your ancestors and what that means. And whakapapa has such a deep meaning within te ao Māori for Māori in terms of their connection to their past. And in some ways the portraits keep a sense of their ancestors alive and the deeds that they did, the achievements they had, their mana, their rangatiratanga.
And kind of what insight can the works in this exhibition provide into understanding the significance of tūpuna representations in te ao Māori?
Well, for the first time in a very long time, the gallery is having the Lindauer portraits displayed alongside whakaaro, so Māori carvings. And the whakaaro were actually part of our founding collection. They were gifted by Sir George Grey, but they've been on deposit at Auckland Museum since 1915. So this is the first time they've been in the building alongside the portraits. And Nathan wanted to bring the whakaaro together with the portraits so that you get the sense of the continuing nature of portraiture across genres. So one of the things for Māori is that they were very quick to adopt oil portraiture and photography because they saw the value of preserving their ancestors through those medium, and having them alongside the carvings gives that sense of continuum and the sort of continual cultural value that is placed on portraits of ancestors.
100%. And as you said, this exhibition is featuring Lindauer's historical oil portraits alongside Whakaaro. Can you tell me a little bit more about the process for selecting works for Ngā Taonga Tūturu?
So it's an entirely collection-based exhibition, and in terms of selecting the carvings, we worked entirely using the Gray collection. So Nathan did that selection before I joined the team, and we basically selected the popo panels that were available within the collection. So there are 7 popo and 2 whakawai door jams. In terms of the Lindauer portraits themselves, we have a very deep collection of Lindauer works. I think we have 64 or 65
wow.
portraits by Lindauer.
Wow.
And so there's a huge range. And so what we did was we started with Tamaki Makaurau as the sort of the centre and worked as a spiral outwards. But we were also interested to try and give some time to portraits that are perhaps less known.
Mm.
And the people may be less known, but their stories are just as fascinating.
Mm.
And so you have, you know, people who may not be everyday names, but have such fascinating lives and tell us so much about themselves and about the 19th century.
Mm, that's beautiful. And you've been talking a bit about co-curating with Nathan Pōhio. What is the significance of having Māori and Pākehā art historical voices in the curation process for this exhibition?
I think it allows us to tell a much bigger and more interesting story. Nathan has a wonderful access to te ao Māori, and understanding and knowledge about Whakaaro that is not sort of within my background. I've done a lot of work on the Lindauer portraits, and so I can talk to that, and also his technical usage, his broader practice in terms of painting Pākehā portraits as well. And so I think it can be a very collaborative process. I think it's a longer process. There's a lot of kōrero, but I think the best things come from that sort of kōrero.
100%. And I did want to talk a little bit more about Pākehā artists depicting Māori. Lindauer was one of New Zealand's leading painter of Māori in the 19th century in both portraits and in scenes of Māori life. He, alongside other Pākehā artists that have depicted Māori, such as Goldie and Louis John Steele, have been criticised for profiting off of Māori culture and perpetuating myths. Equally, however, these artists are considered deeply important, being widely commissioned by Māori and Pākehā alike for their acknowledgement of the mana of tūpuna. What role do you think artists and works such as these have played in depicting Māori and Māori life during this period?
As you point out, it's really complex, and I think there are both positives and negatives. I think the dying race issue is definitely something that we need to be consider and be conscious of, but I think it sometimes gets in the way of understanding the sitter or the subject's agency, particularly in relation to portraiture, and particularly where if the subject commissioned the portrait from Lindauer or Goldie or chose to sit for them, their agency gets totally left behind when you focus on the dying race. Nahiraka Mason, who was a former curator curator Māori at the art gallery, drew my attention to an amazing whakatauki, which is Te Karohia Ngā Whetū, or pluck out the stars. And the idea behind that is that Māori have embraced these portraits because they take the best out of them and they leave the things that they're not interested behind.
Mm.
So they focus on the fact that their tūpuna are represented, and that they have those for now. But also one of the things about Lindauer in particular is he represented tūpuna in a very respectful way. He acknowledges their mana and their rangatiratanga in much the same way as he would for his Pākehā portraits. You know, they were shown in their best clothes with their finest attire, and it was a mana enhancing and enhancing the rangatiratanga. So I think it can be sometimes a distraction in a way of sort of not acknowledging the contribution that these works can make.
What influence do you think Pākehā artists depicting Māori have had on the shape and direction of New Zealand art?
Interestingly, they were kind of ignored by the art world for most of the 20th century,
right.
And sort of seen as history, and not really acknowledged as of any artistic value. But what changed is at the time of the Te Māori exhibition in 1987, Roger Blackley in consultation with Māori contributors to the exhibition brought out the Lindau portraits and hung them as if it was a marae, and Māori embraced the portraits, and it's the response of the descendants to the portraits that has really brought them back into discussion. And since that happened in 1987, there's been a complete revision of the way in which we look at Goldie and Lindau, and see that there are different values that you can place on the portraits, and that they can be valued as portraits of tūpuna.
Those were all of the questions that I had today. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about the exhibition or curation process or anything?
It's been a really wonderful chance to work back in the historic part of the gallery, which has just reopened. And one of the very special things about it is it's just been renamed the Te Kawau Gallery after Apihai Te Kawau. And the story of Apihai Te Kawau is not as well known as I think it possibly should be in Tamaki Makaurau. He was involved in an allocation of land to Hobson called a tuku whenua of 3,000 acres of the central city, and that's where the CBD is now in 1840. And so the gallery has been renamed, and the gallery that the exhibition is in has been renamed in his honour as the Te Kawau Gallery, and going forward it will be called that. So on last Wednesday we had an amazing karakia for it, and Joe Pihima, who's our head of Kaupapa Māori, it sort of got us all to say, whose house is this? And it was Te Kawau's house, and it was a really moving kind of way to really bring alive the portraits and see the space filled with waiata and karanga and kōrero about our history and our history with these portraits, and also the portraits themselves.
That was co-curator of Ngā Tōnga Tūturu Treasured Māori Portraits, curator of historical New Zealand art, Dr. Jane Davidson Ladd, speaking to Sophia. The exhibition is on now at Auckland Art Gallery, Toyo Tāmaki.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
Tuku pā tui mai, text us on 5395 and we'll be right back. Keep it on the B.
Thank you.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
Through the Lens, Gendered Reflections is an exhibition of photography by women artists spanning a period of over 40 years. The collection includes visual works by alumni of the University of Auckland, Waipapa Tō Mata Rau, including Yvonne Todd, Lisa Rehanna, Marty Friedlander, Anne Shelton, and Fiona Partington. Curated by the Art History Department's Postgraduate Art and Writing, Art Writing and Curatorial Practice class, the compositions are visually striking, including documentary images as well as carefully staged compositions. They highlight the seminal role that women have played in the evolution of photography in Aotearoa. I spoke to Ross Steens, Jodie Yawa McMillan, and Maddie McDonald about Gendered Reflections and began by asking them a bit about the show in general.
What was the experience of collating photography and art spanning 40 years?
So we started off in this art history class all together, and the works were provided to us by the lecturer, Linda Tyler. They were initially given to us in an envelope, and it was up to us to try and figure out who our artist was. There's no title or dimensions, anything like that.
Cool. Can you speak a little about the works, or some of the works in the exhibition, in terms of how they reflect the roles of women in Aotearoa's evolution of photography?
Yeah, so the exhibition's called Through the Lens, Gendered Reflections, and all the works in the exhibition are photographs by wahine from Aotearoa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, spanning generations. But all works are in the collection of the Auckland University.
No, that's good.
So Linda Tyler talks about how the university first started collecting art in 1966,
mm-hmm.
but photography wasn't part of the collection until 2001.
Yeah.
And so there are a few reasons for that. There's a lot of gender bias within collections worldwide. And historically, different forms of art are sort of seen to be more male-dominated and more female-dominated.
Yeah.
And so historically, things like painting and sculpture are sort of determined to be male.
Yeah.
And that is determined as fine art. Whereas in the modern day, photography and video art is becoming more and more aligned with fine art and sort of accepted. And so from 2001, it sort of became a way of retrospectively collecting for those gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are major female artists such as Fiona Partington, Fiona Clark, Marty Friedlander, who
yep.
were working, you know, a lot earlier, but are now part of the collection, which is, quite exciting. So that's, I guess, why it reflects such a massive time period, is because
yeah.
it's sort of been a recent focus.
Yeah, interesting. Are there some finds or some works that sort of stood out to you when you were cataloguing them for this exhibition?
I think personally, like my work, my work is by Yuki Kihara,
mm-hmm.
and she deals a lot with reclaiming the gaze from colonial sort of histories, specifically in Samoa.
Yeah.
And she is Fafafine, so the third gender of Samoa, and she talks a lot about the history of art and specifically about representations of female Pacific bodies,
mm-hmm.
Male Pacific bodies as well, but more sort of female.
Mm-hmm.
And artists such as Gauguin, who, you know, had
yeah.
the really highly sexualized images of young women, which
yes.
were obviously highly problematic. And so she's working to reclaim those, which I think is a really, really awesome practice.
Yeah.
But obviously I'm biased because it is my artist.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, there are some amazing photos in the collection. I don't know if anyone else wants to talk about that one.
Yeah, if anyone else wants to jump in.
I really enjoyed both of the Anne Noble works in
mm-hmm.
the show, Dead Bee Portrait Number 2 and A Song Without Words, which
mm-hmm.
is a beautiful wide of cuts of a swan. I think that the way that Anne Noble likes to sort of get really close and intimate with objects, non-human objects,
mm-hmm.
shall we say, really explore sort of the textural side of what animals have going on.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyable.
My work is by Fiona Partington, Inseparable Huia. And it's definitely one that's best seen in real life. When I first received it in the envelope, on paper,
is a reproduction on an A4 piece of paper. It's not one that does it justice.
No.
It was actually really hard to, I didn't recognise it initially.
Jodie was actually really disappointed with her image.
I was. And then when I realised what it was, I was very excited.
Yeah.
Stoked.
I was stoked. Fiona Partington's an amazing artist. She has spent a lot of time in museums and archives photographing what exists there in our collection. So her work really reflects the history of Aotearoa, mm-hmm. The difficult histories, mm-hmm. And bringing light to those. The huia are now extinct. But through her particular lens, thanks Maddie, through her lens she does manage to bring life mm-hmm. and emotion back to these objects, but also taonga.
Yeah.
I think that that's one key thing about this as well, is that they're not all photographs of women, they're not all portraits, some are portraits of other artists, some are of whoever. It's like it's a really wide range of artworks, which has been really cool to be able to put them all together and sort of find the themes. And I think the part where we got given them in the secret envelope, I think that it's made it more fun in terms of then being able to figure out how they work together and what story we want to tell. And there were some that were really familiar, like instantly, and some that were much less obvious. And I think that that's been part of the whole process.
Yeah, there's some beautiful artworks from all across the range here. Lisa Rehana, Fiona Partington, as we've mentioned, there's an Ava Seymour, mm-hmm. there's a couple Megan Jenkinsons, a Jennifer French, and some Yvonne Todds. So some wonderful artworks composed from New Zealand artists all mm-hmm. across the board there.
Yeah, and some that are tutoring at Auckland University as well.
Yeah,
cool. They all do have a connection to University of Auckland, not necessarily directly studying here. For example, Yuki Kihara, it was her first solo show that was at Gus Fisher, which is the university's gallery. Others have been to ELAM, have taught at ELAM. There's a connection to all of them, which
Nice. Is there anything else you guys would like to add?
We'd really like people to come and see the show.
Yeah,
there's an old government house, and see them in real life and enjoy them and reflect on them. And
And it's going to be open for a long time, so bring your friends.
Yeah.
Opening on the 2nd of October, next Wednesday, drinks and nibbles from 5:30.
Great. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Ross Sains, Jodie Yawa-McMillan and Maddie McDonald speaking to me about Through the Lens, Gendered Reflections. That's an exhibition of photography by women artists spanning 40 years. A special preview of Gendered Reflections will be held at Old Government House on the 2nd of October, next Wednesday, at 5:30 p.m. You can RSVP at through.the.lens.exhibition@gmail.com.
BFM.
Do text in your thoughts on these pieces or anything that's on your mind at Rima Toru Iwa Rima 5395. We'll be right back, so keep it on the B.
Every breath. obsessed and heading back to New Zealand to celebrate new album Lemons, Limes and Orchids, 95 BFM presents Joan as Policewoman, performing live at Ray Friedman Art Centre, Friday, May 16. With her magnetic stage presence and hypnotic voice, don't miss Joan as Policewoman's career-spanning concert from the grand piano. Joan as Policewoman, Lemons, Limes and Orchids Tour, Ray Friedman Art Centre, Friday, May 16. Tickets from plusone.co.nz.
Musical mayhem is afoot at MOTAT's new school holiday experience. Make it loud! March to MOTAT and discover the science of music and sound.
Sing on the karaoke stage, create symphonies with the absurd orchestra, and step and shimmy on a floor piano, plus heaps more.
MOTAT School Holiday Experience. Make it loud. Included in general admission, September 28th till October 13th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more info, head to motat.nz.
Look, Mum, I'm a real cowboy now.
Oh, Butch, what have you done?
That science guy, you know the one with all the weird pets? He said he can make me a cowboy.
Please let this be a nightmare.
I even have a tail. This grass is delicious. Did you do something new to it?
I guess we'll save on groceries.
Tune into Border Radio with Kirsten Warner, Deputy Paul or Louis Jarlov, bringing you a piece of American country and blues each Sunday.
Well, she's got a temper like a Texas storm.
I'm dreaming alone in a hotel bed and he's mine.
Border Radio, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. right here on 95 BFM.
Various artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
Chaos Magic is an exhibition by Matt Joyles, currently showing at Window Gallery. Based in Tāmaki, Joyles is a painter whose works draw from visual elements found organically online and graphic design in the urban wild. In response to Mark Fisher's publication, Capitalist Realism, the exhibition consists of a series of a small-scale abstract painting installation and a large depiction of Garfield. Sophia spoke to Matt about his practice and the exhibition.
I wanted to start by firstly asking you about the general kaupapa of your work as an artist. What inspires your practice?
Well, broadly, I'm an abstract painter, so I guess I tend to think it's useful. I think people are often quite familiar with talking about music rather than visual art, and I think genre is a useful idea. So as an abstract painter, I make kind of small abstract paintings at the moment, but also with kind of pop elements. Into the Garfield in the work, sort of visual quotation. Yeah, kind of a mix of those things, but also with a little bit of a, I guess, a post-conceptual framework. So there's some ideas to it as well, essentially.
And yeah, to kind of add on to what you're saying there about having ideas behind those works, this exhibition is in response to Mark Fisher's publication, Capitalist Realism. What is the significance of this text for you?
It's just brilliant. I don't know. I do think about the world today. It's kind of rough out there to be an artist, but I think it's, you know, there's a lot of problems that we face. And so the text kind of deals with the blend of neoliberalism as a, you know, as a economic system, as a hegemony in Western government, pretty much. But like also, I guess, the legacy of postmodern thought and how they come together to kind of like, it can be hard to imagine the future. It can be hard to imagine, it seems like, say with modernism, with modern art, the new was, and the future was all that existed. Everything had to be fresh and revolutionary. And then I guess postmodernism, with its cynical perspective, kind of said, well, no, nothing's new. There's nothing new under the sun. And we kind of, all that is sort of suspect. And then how do you push forward kind of from that perspective? How do you think about what, how do you continue to make? How do you, you know, continue to exist and be an artist if you think, well, everything's been done? So those are some of the thoughts that kind of are highlighted in that text. And it's very short. It's very relevant to the issues we face today. So I really recommend anyone who hasn't read it to pick it up. Yeah.
And in Chaos Magic and in responding to Fisher, you question the role of art and artists in the current political climate. Now on the other side of the making process of this exhibition, what conclusion have you kind of come to, if there is a conclusion? How would you describe that role?
I guess like the obvious metaphor that I maybe that you could kind of see from the show is, I guess, like the artist as a sort of a seer or a muse, a magician. Because I think a lot of people expect art to have a lot of meaning, you know, in a sort of a post-religious or medieval society, you know, art is kind of the last bastion of that sort of, I mean, people find meaning in lots of different ways. But I also, as I guess, like a social critic, you might talk about jester's privilege or something. I think part of what I was thinking about with the show is, you know, like I have this this opportunity to have a little bit of a platform, and part of, I guess, the, my struggle with that is, you know, how do you go out there and you say, oh, look at my pretty picture, and not be, you know, while you're up there, say something about, you know, there's so many political issues that are so pressing and real and important. Like, you know, the genocide in Gaza, which is now escalating, it seems, to a full-on situation, to say the least. And, you know, in, here in New Zealand, it seems that this government is fully set on a recolonisation of Tangata Māori. And it's really like, you know, there are so many issues in this. Like, well, I put some colours and some shapes on a thing. Listen to me, that seems, I have doubts about that. But then, you know, like, it's also just very human. It's like, well, you know, there are awful, I don't know, maybe that's dismissive, awful things happen all the time. But also, you know, should we stop cooking? Should we stop dancing or, like, telling stories? So, like, I also believe in a sort of perenniality, I guess, of art making, and it's sort of... it can be also sort of other. So I'm still dealing with that. I don't think I've resolved that. But I did want to think, is there a way to be socially responsible when given a platform like this?
I also wanted to talk about the depiction of Garfield in this exhibition. There's also another work in the exhibition of a Disney character, and I'll have to get you to tell me who that is. But how do these images speak to the more abstract works in the exhibition?
Maybe I'm dating myself. It's Mickey Mouse from the film Fantasia.
I like thought it was Mickey Mouse, but I was like, it looked a little bit different to how, I'm not that well versed in Disney stuff, I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, well, this is probably our generational divide.
Perhaps
it's just a series of vignettes. The film set to classical music. And in one of the scenes, Mickey Mouse is a sorcerer, and in order to, I guess, make his, maybe as a series of life hacks, who knows, I think, I don't recall it so perfectly, but he kind of enchants the household items, sort of like a la Beauty and the Beast, perhaps, to kind of do his bidding and make his life easier. I think because I sort of, you know, like the show is called Chaos Magic, Chaos magic is sort of related to finding symbols in pop culture that have a psychic power, I guess. I'm using it as a metaphor, but I guess people, you know, approached it or approach it currently as an actual magical practice. So that was sort of the connection. It's Mickey Mouse, the wizard. And the image is sort of doubled from a fairly like, oh, it's like an outline, but then it becomes sort of abstracted in the second iteration. In the drawing, there was more. You wanted to ask about Garfield, didn't you?
Yeah, no. If you want to speak to that too, that would be cool.
I quite like using visually. I like having something quite clean, and then like my abstract works are a little bit more textural or maybe messy. So that in a way that works. But also, I'm not sure I completely resolved it. You know, as a coherent statement, perhaps. But I sort of started thinking about the show. I was thinking about Marshall McLuhan and the medium as the massage, and sort of thinking about information and propaganda, I guess. So that's sort of where I started with the show, and then I kind of got into making, and then that's my practice is sort of more abstract, but then I kind of tried to bring it back through this kind of using chaos magic as a metaphor, and the abstract works kind of have these shapes that you could approach as sigils. As symbol, like magical symbols with unknown potential. But yeah, the Garfield, there is in the text, which unfortunately doesn't seem to be available at this time, but should be on the website soon. There's like a probably defunct meme at this point, but it's on knowyourmeme.com. you are not immune to propaganda, and it uses Garfield's face in that context. So that's sort of how it's related to information. But it seems also timely, I guess, because, you know, on the constant repetition of in vogue, resurrected cartoons, I think there's a Garfield movie that's coming out this year or has come out.
And also the show and your work often uses quite bright and playful colours. What attracts you to these, and how does this choice contribute to the themes of chaos magic?
I wish I had a good answer for that. I don't know, why do people like sugar and salt? though I was, because chaos magic uses the idea of sigils kind of juice into sort of a cult theory by Osmond Spear. He recommends using complementary colours to create an effective imprint, I guess, on the psyche, you know, like the strong contrast. You know, like when you stare at something for a long time that might be quite bright and then you close your eyes, you might have a sort of an image imprinted on your retina.
Yeah.
So I guess that's like the theory behind what he was recommending for that magical practice. But it's also just like nice to look at. I don't know. It's an aesthetic preference that I haven't got a theory to attach to at this point.
Also, just lastly, what's next for you in your practice?
I have no shows lined up. It's sort of proposal season, so I am talking with a friend about maybe working on a publication where my work is also connected to, I'm interested in sort of graphic design and advertising, which was perhaps a little bit more apparent in my last show at Blue Oyster, and also sort of graffiti and like incidental mark that you might see in the urban environment. So potentially a photo book, otherwise probably continuing to make some paintings. I'd like to figure out how to make a big painting. I think I've made some good practice progress in the last couple of years figuring out an approach to small painting. So, yeah.
That was artist Matt Joyle speaking to Sophia about Chaos Magic, currently showing at Window Gallery in the University of Auckland Waipapa Taumatoro General Library until October 18th.
95 BFM.
We'll be right back after a short break. For stage direction, keep it on the B.
The mighty Aotearoa Alternative Awards return for 2024. And now it's time to announce the regional awards.
Te tohu tiki tiki o te hāpai ia te reo irirangi pōho. Outstanding contribution to 95BFM, brought to you by Motat. He tohu kahurangi I te pāhotanga kia te reo irirangi pōho. 95BFM's outstanding achievement in broadcasting, brought to you by Stardome. And Te Waiata Rorotu 2024, kia te reo irirangi pōho, 95BFM's favourite song of 2024, brought to you by ProGear.
New Zealand On Air presents the mighty Aotearoa Alternative Awards 2024, Saturday the 2nd of November, 7pm. Listen in on air or watch online at srn.nz.
To see a world in a grain of coffee and a heaven in a perfect roast. Hold infinity in the mug in your hand and eternity in every gulp.
Atomic Coffee. Each bean is a world of its own, and when they are blended together expertly by the Atomic team, they create a divinely good coffee.
Atomic Coffee, available at the Roastery in Kingsland and three bustling espresso bars in central Auckland.
Or get your fix online at atomiccoffee.co.nz.
See the sea in style. The NZ Maritime Museum Hui Te Ananui a Tangaroa are launching heritage vessel Ted Ashby this school holidays. Hoist, tack, jibe, and enjoy the views of the Waitemata Harbour. Ted Ashby Heritage Sailing, Tuesday to Sunday. For bookings and more info, go to maritimemuseum.co.nz.
Future sounds from the underground. The hottest new tracks from Aotearoa and around the world.
Totally wired.
Sounds from up to 2 weeks in the future.
Next month, even.
Some of these tracks are like 2025 vibes, bruv.
Totally Wired with Hunter. Tomorrow's music today. Saturdays 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. Only on 95BFM. Thanks to Flying Out. Flyingout.co.nz.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, it's Stage Direction with Alice Canton.
Kia ora, we've got in the studio today for Stage Direction, Alice Canton. Yes. Hi, Alice.
Hello, hello. I
I'm like frantically jostling my baby in the background because she decided today she's going to be wide awake and she's going to join in on the conversation that we're having. But it's not just me and Evelyn in the studio. We're joined by Rutini Spooner, the one, the only.
Ah, Kilda.
We're here talking about Be Like Billy, which is Rutini's show on Etipo Theatre. You've been touring across the country. You were in...
We started off in Rotorua.
Yeah.
And then we went to Otaki at Māori Land Hub. Then we're here in Tāmaki. And then popping over to Gisborne and Nelson.
Yeah. Gosh, Be Like Billy, this show, how do you even begin to talk, explore this notion of Billy T. James, an icon and a legend, but also an actual human being who lived and breathed and was flawed and also kind of, where do you even begin with a work like this?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I mean, that is so evident, and because this is draft 23, you know, and it's had so many different versions of it. It's very straight theatery, very purely bandy, very, anyway, we arrived at this thing that we're not trying to solve anything. We're not trying to, we're just trying to bring that conversation. Because you're right, he was very complex. So it celebrates that. And I think it's like the easiest way is like it's an honouring of him and that time, and particularly Māori entertainers of that time. But it's more the path that they led, you know, and then us deciding how much of that path we keep going down and how much we branch off or create our new path as Māori entertainers.
I mean, it's really the complexity of like the representation of an identity here. We're talking about, you know, he knew, right? He knew what he was doing, and he did so with tenacity. And it's really challenging to talk about, like, he knew and he did it, and for whom.
Yeah.
What sort of big questions were you asking of your own identity as a Māori performer? You know, I've seen you in such a range of work. I think, originally, you're one of the few performers I've seen in this country. I've seen you tap dancing in musicals. I've seen you literally 5, 6, 7, 8 across the stage, sashaying away. I've seen you in straight play, you know, plays and everything in between. So, what was kind of coming up for you in your own practice, I guess?
I mean, it's that, you know, theatre being that whole kind of thing that you can showcase that kind of thing. The whole show, the premise is, because I used to be, for a while there, I was a Billy T impersonator. And so there was a particular event that we talk about in the show that turned it for me. Because, you know, like, so a lot of the content of that time that we just inherited as a good time, you know, it changes with my kind of generation, because we are products of like Kohanga Reo movement, Kura Kaupapa movement, and so basically the show talks about that tussle that I had about around kind of moving forward that way, or not the uncomfortability about around that.
So I mean, we're talking about the sort of discomfort. What might what my audiences face in this work, Be Like Billy, when she's loving it, by the way, when you talk about discomfort, is it around the role of the Māori, like that sort of Māori persona or something? Is that the kind of what you're depositing?
Totally. We hone into like the tenue sketch and like the stereotypes that those particular things, you know, and the generalizations that those sorts of stereotypes feed, and having to wear those and then trying to kind of rebuke them and get rid of them, and especially because, you know, like I often get, because it's a lot of people, I'm going to say, you know, like non-Māori, a lot of people's idea of a Māori entertainer on stage singing and joking is Billy T. Yes. So when a completely different Māori singing joker jumps on, we are all of a sudden cloaked in all of those things. And so it's basically trying to like go, here are the things that we're juggling, you know, like let's not too keen on being the, joke somebody else's joke.
Yes, you know?
Which is,
and I'm sure there'll be people that would go, because you know the beloved Billy T, and then probably go, oh, hold on, was I actually a part of, I don't want to say part of the problem, but you know, was I a part of reinforcing that kind of narrative inadvertently? Have you had pushback from folk?
Well, the thing is I think that was the key for us, was it's a product of that time.
Mm-hmm.
He's a product of that time. Our thoughts and our memories are a product of the time. And so what we're obviously trying to say is, like, it's not to condemn that, but there is some stuff that we don't need to hold on to.
Mm.
And so it's the invitation to the person who's watching to think around that again, and not to just reconstitute it, you know.
Keep rolling out the same, holding folk to the same stereotype, essentially.
Totally.
I mean,
there's so much. The funny thing is like those kind of sketches that Billy came up with back then were influenced by his infatuation with British comedy.
Yeah, right.
You know, so he magpied a lot of that British comedy back then in the 70s and 80s, and then redid it his own way. So if anything, I'm picking up from that and just kind of spinning it.
It's a postmodern, postmodern. it's a Māori performer scrutinising another Māori performer scrutinising British culture in a colonial context. Oh gosh, there's so much in that. The work is it is a solo work, but you've got a show band. You've got a whole, behind you. So it's songs. It's, what is it?
Yeah, it's kind of our version of Māori cabaret.
Oh,
and
yes.
So we're this weird thing of, not weird, but beautiful kind of cross section of like theatre and cabaret.
Yes.
So it's like gig theatre almost. And it is me and my band, the Takeda Mutton Birds, and who are all Ōtautahi based.
Yeah,
and it is a solo work, but you know, as you know, there's just like there's a big, huge crowd around it, crew around it. Sorry, and I think I learned pretty early on when I started doing solo works that it's actually quite isolating, you know.
Yeah.
And,
I'm
like, oh. Okay, I don't actually like working by myself, so I will,
So I get in six people to be my band.
Then they're going to, no, don't just sit there, you're in it.
You're
this person, you're that person, and
Oh, cool. How is sort of Māori, what is Māori cabaret? That's controversial, but for you, what does that mean?
Yeah, that's something I'm always asking myself, what is Māori cabaret? And that's something that Holly and I have been working on.
Yes. This is Holly Chibble-Eason, the director, worked with you as a director and the dramaturg in the work,
But like, it feels like my life mission is like, what is Māori cabaret? At the moment, I think, and after like researching a whole lot of and going to see a whole lot of cabaret overseas, contemporary cabaret anyway, I think Māori cabaret is this interesting kind of crossroads of theatery. It's actually, you know, to be honest, it's actually not too much different from any of the other cabaret.
Right.
We just use structures within tikanga Māori.
Ooh.
So like the structure of Whai Kōrero, and that structures a lot of, you know, the show and our practice.
Yes.
But it's just like any other cabaret where it doesn't kind of, where you set it up and to push it further, you drop the song. And But I think that's it. I think it's also, I think the cabaret sits really nicely within like Māori storytelling, because that's kind of how we tell
stories.
It's like, you know, if you think about the Maraiatea, we go there, we here's our points. It could be robust conversation, it could be really pointed, it could be really like cheeky, and you know, it's in its purest form, it's not te aroha at the end.
The vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. But it's like, and to kick the ball home, you know, it's this number.
Yeah.
And so I think it's one of the strongest kind of new ways of taking traditional Māori storytelling. One of them.
We are talking about Be Like Billy. You've got two more shows on in Tamaki Makaurau, tonight and tomorrow night at Te Pō Theatre in Henderson. at Corbin's estate. You've got we've been plugging during Kuanga Festival, which is on at the moment, but this is the work to bring home the festival. You've still got some tickets left.
Yeah, we've still got a handful of tickets tonight, and Saturday is looking pretty full, but well, it's getting pretty full, so but I think there is still a few more for Saturday.
You've got to swoop in, you've got to get them, you've got to see the man, the legend that is Rutanay Spooner.
I mean, even my microphone sock is yellow.
Oh, it's yellow.
Mean, did you set that up?
Hey, it's all in the ether.
It was all planned.
So yeah, Beth, whereabouts can people get tickets from?
You can get your tickets through Te Pō's website. So you guys, everyone listening, you need to go do that right now. Yes. It's going to be amazing. Thanks very much for coming in today, Alice and Rutanay. It's been really great listening to you guys chat.
We could talk for... I've got so much I want to ask you.
And I could always yarn with you. And, this is my public mihi to you as well, because you were there when we first, started this. You put me and Holly together.
Oh, look, that was... Yes, I want to say that was, 10 years ago or so. It's been a long journey. And I just really think at the heart of this work, it's doing the heavy lifting of the kinds of questions we should be asking, not just in theatre in this country, but more broadly about our identity here in Aotearoa. So, the pleasure is all mine.
Thanks very much. That was Stage Direction with Alice Canton and Rutanay Spooner talking about Be Like Billy.
That was Stage Direction with Alice Canton.
Just
That was Lorelei, the Cocteau Twins. You're a 95BFM.
It's the 95BFM Art Guide on various artists. It's paintings and that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tāmaki Makaurau. As mentioned on the show, Ngā Tonga Tūturu Treasured Māori Portraits is on now at Auckland Art Gallery Toyo Tāmaki. It is closed today, but it will reopen tomorrow. Also mentioned on the show, there will be a special preview of the exhibition Through the Lens, Gendered Reflections at Old Government House. That's on the 2nd of October, next Wednesday. Drinks and nibbles are provided, 5:30pm. Make sure you RSVP at through.the.lens.exhibition@gmail.com. Chaos Magic by Matt Joyles is on at Window Gallery until October 18th. As mentioned on Stage Direction, Be Like Billy is on at Te Pō Theatre next week as a part of Kōanga Festival. You can get tickets through Te Pō Theatre's website. Tomorrow is the last day to catch Tia Ansell's Building Patterns, which is showing its suite gallery. From Elsewhere, an exhibition by Newell Harry and Peter Simpson is on at Te Uru Gallery until the 10th of November. Erotic Geologies is an exhibition by Natalie Tozer on at Gao Langsford Gallery, Onehunga, until the 5th of October. Public Clay by Fiona Jack is on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 12th of October. And Gao Langsford's Gallery Spring Catalogue Exhibition for 2024 is on at the Auckland City Gallery until the 19th of October. Rider Instinct by Seraphine Pick is on at Te Uru Gallery until the 27th of October. And if you're looking for somewhere to be tonight, Chris Fest is the place. It's a fundraising gig for Chris Kemp with Dick Move, Dirty Murder, Beth Torrance, Ratso and more. It's going to be a great night, so get your tickets from under the radar. And if you have something you want to get on the Arts Guide, get in touch at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko era te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki moa mō tēnei rā. That's all for us on various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us. Dr. Jane Davidson-Ladd, Ross Deans, Jodie Yawa McMillan, and Maddie McDonald, Matt Joyles, and to Rutini Spooner and Alice Kenton for stage direction. Nē rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in, and remember you can listen back to all these pieces on 95bfm.com. Ka hoki mai mātou a te rā wiki. Next up is Land of the Good Groove. You're listening to BFM. Stay tuned.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.